Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. It's March now, and that means Toronto's Spring Film Festival season has begun. Irish Film Festival is on this weekend for A Touch of Blarney, and the WTF Festival starts showing eccentric movies at the Royal Cinema today. In this case, WTF stands for What the Film. Great stuff. Also opening is What Walla Wants, the NFB documentary about a Palestinian woman, and Gaspar Noé's amazing film Climax, only movie I know of, which includes a fantastic dance performance, followed by amazing title sequence, and then a horrific panoply of drug-addled sex and violence. Three for one, all in one movie. So, keeping with this theme of the strange and unusual, this week I'm looking at offbeat movies with eccentric characters. There's a French widow with a yen for pocketbooks, a psychotherapist who keeps fine art front and center, and two older women who want to save their art's center from falling apart. Ruben Brandt, Collector, written and directed by Milorad Krstic. So Dr. Ruben Brandt is a psychoanalyst obsessed by art. He lives and works in an isolated alpine chalet where he treats his rich but troubled clients, including a banker with an eating problem and a former bodyguard. Meanwhile, Mike Kowalski, a private detective from DC, is in Paris, chasing a notorious cat burglar down city streets. She's carrying a priceless Egyptian artifact. But he can't catch this Mimi. She's a former circus acrobat who's too fast for him. So Mimi tracks down Dr. Brandt and visits his clinic because she wants to get rid of her kleptomania. She can't stop stealing. But in a strange turn of events, patients turn to doctors and doctors to patients because Dr. Brandt, the man they all rely on, is plagued with hallucinations of people in famous paintings. For example, in Venus's Botticelli, Birth of Venus, the Venus in Botticelli's Birth of Venus, is she trying to kill him? How about Andy Warhol's Double Elvis? So basically, Brand's patients, including Mimi, decide the only way to save their doctor is to steal all the paintings that obsess him. So they begin a series of elaborate heists around the world of the best known paintings for the most famous galleries. So can Kowalski solve the puzzle, and catch the culprits? Or will Ruben Brandt, the collector, triumph? Okay, Ruben Brandt, Collector is a simple, silly story told in animation form with amazing images. It feels like a cartoon guide to Janssen's History of Art on acid. The characters themselves are portrayed as cubist or two-dimensional or two-faced Januses, depending on their psychological illness. And the plot is flat and inconsequential, but it's the animated art and the psychedelic imagery that really sticks with you. Greta, directed by Neil Jordan. He's the guy who did The Crying Game. Frances, played by Chloe Grace Moritz, is depressed. She's a recent college grad who works as a server in a fancy Manhattan restaurant, and she shares a spacious condo with her best friend, Erica, played by Micah Monroe, whose dad gave it to her as a gift. But ever since her mom died, Frances never seems to go out anymore. But her attitude suddenly changes when she finds a designer purse that someone left on a subway. Finally, there's something good she can do, a good deed. So she takes the ID and brings it to its owner. Greta, played by Isabelle Huppert, is an older widow, a widow who lives in an isolated cottage. Her home is like a piece of France, right in the middle of downtown New York City. She plays Chopin and bakes cookies. It's like at first sight. Greta needs someone to spend time with since her daughter moved away, and Frances misses her own late mother, terribly. They go for walks in Central Park, they share intimate meals at her home, and they even adopt a dog to help keep Greta company when she's not around. Greta says she's worried that Frances will go away just like her daughter. "Don't worry, Greta," she says. "I'm like chewing gum. I'll stick around." Imagine two such good friends meeting at random. But everything changes when Frances discovers Greta's secret. That lost purse she found, it wasn't actually lost. Greta placed it there so they would meet. Ooh, is Greta just desperately lonely? Is she a con artist or is she a psychopath? Even when Frances cuts off all contact with her, Greta keeps showing up wherever she goes. She's a stalker who can't be stopped. Will Frances ever forgive her, and will Greta ever leave her alone? So Greta starts as a conventional drama but turns into an unexpectedly psychological thriller. It's almost like a retelling of a classic Brothers Grimm fairy tale, the innocent girl who's lured into the witch's lair, and then terrible things could happen. Though not her best film, Isabelle Huppert is credible as the potential villain, though Chloe Grace Moretz, it feels like she's wasted as this potential helpless victim. It's hard to picture her as a scaredy cat, not after Kick-Ass. Greta, the movie is okay as a run-of-the-mill cat-and-mouse thriller, but I thought it could have been so much more. A Bread Factory, written and directed by Patrick Wang. The Bread Factory is an art center in a small town in the Hudson Valley, New York. Formerly an industrial bakery, now it's where the post-industrial town folk go to see a movie, put on a play, or attend a poetry reading. It's been run by Dorothea and Greta, played by Tyne Daly and Elizabeth Henry, for more than 40 years. At the moment, there are filmmaking lessons for little kids, run by an auteur, played by Janine Garofalo, a Greek tragedy starring an elderly Shakespearean actor, and a Chekhov-like drama in production. It's a hotbed of creativity and one that involves the whole community. But everything is put at risk when a strange new group arrives in town. They're part of a pair of performers slash conceptual artists known as May and Ray, a sort of a blue man group with just one man and one woman. They're vaguely associated with China, though no one quite knows how, and they have a large international following, at least according to their videos on YouTube. They even have a catchy logo, t-shirts and tote bags. The problem is their work is hollow and pointless. And more important, the town school board is thinking of transferring all the art spending that goes to the Bread Factory to May Ray. So can the town artists and town folk and performers get together to save the Bread Factory, or will corporate interests triumph? Okay, A Bread Factory sounds on the surface like an ordinary movie, but it's actually great. I really like this one. Dozens of characters and a complex, twisted plot manages to pull together and keep you interested, not distracted, with each storyline and character carefully constructed. There's a teenager interning at the town newspaper, a kid who functions as a projectionist, a critic and an actor in their 80s or 90s who still hold a grudge 50 years later, and many, many more plot lines. It's wonderful. Feels like a good John Sayles movie. So far, I've only seen part one. That's 2 hours long, but I can't wait to see part two. Bread Factory is a delightful treat. Greta and Ruben Brandt Collector both open today in Toronto. Check your local listings. And A Bread Factory is playing this weekend at WTF Festival at the Royal Cinema. This is Daniel Garb of the Movies each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.